The English Eccentric by E. O. Higgins.
In 1765, a distinguished French scholar by the name of Pierre-Jean Grosley visited England for the first time and was struck by the level of eccentricity he observed in the natives. Writing home on the subject, he noted that this unusual behaviour he had observed could be attributed to a mixture of fogs, beef, and beer, aggravated by the tedium of the English Sunday. Bruce Robinson, the writer and director of the film With Nail and I, once declared, "Those with money are eccentric, those without, insane." But what is eccentricity? Well, apparently, free to those that can afford it, and very expensive to those that can't.
William Buckland, 1784-1856. The Man That Ate Flies.
William Buckland was born in Axminster in 1784, only a few miles away from the fossil-rich coasts of Dorset and East Devon. The son of an Anglican priest, Buckland divided most of his youth between his father's church and the local beaches. Taking holy orders, he was ordained in 1809, which helped him qualify for a fellowship at Oxford. In 1813, Buckland was appointed reader in mineralogy, giving lively and popular lectures with an increasing emphasis on paleontology. As an unofficial curator of the Ashmolean Museum, he built up collections and toured Europe, looking for interesting artifacts. Buckland was elected to the Royal Society in 1818, the same year he managed to convince the Prince Regent, later George IV, to endow an additional readership upon him, this time in what he termed undergroundology, later renamed geology. He was the first holder of this new appointment. According to written reports by his students, Buckland gave some fairly unforgettable lectures. A pupil recounted a slightly terrifying episode from one of his undergraduate classes in his biography, The Life and Correspondence.
He suddenly dashed down the steps and rushed, skull in hand, at the first undergraduate on the front bench and shouted,
"What rules the world?"
The youth, terrified, threw himself against the next back seat and answered not a word. He rushed then onto me, pointing the skull full in my face.
"What rules the world?"
"I haven't an idea,"
I said.
"The stomach, sir,"
he cried, again mounting his rostrum.
"The stomach rules the world. The great ones eat the less, and the less the lesser still."
Buckland endeavoured to make his lectures as entertaining as possible, aware that none of the university's faculty was required to study natural science. Making them fun and thought-provoking became his only way of ensuring anyone turned up. To this end, Buckland would routinely bring to the lecture theatre his adopted pet bear, Tiglath Pellisair, who would prowl around the stage whilst he talked, dressed in a cap and gown. Large audiences often gave Buckland stage fright, and he could only relax once he'd made the audience laugh. He achieved that goal in one lecture by happily strutting about the stage, imitating the gait of strange extinct birds, whose tracks he had discovered preserved in rocks in North Yorkshire. The birds were in fact more likely to be bipedal dinosaurs. Afterwards, one of Buckland's colleagues remarked,
"The grossness of the buffoonery acted on me like an emetic."
Which goes to show, some people really don't care for bird impressions. When living as an unmarried cleric working in academia, Buckland lived modestly. But at the age of 41, he married, and married well, which was very much the style of the time. Mary Morland's friend Caroline Fox later described how the two lovers met.
Both were travelling in Dorsetshire and each were reading a new and weighty tome by the French naturalist Georges Cuvier. They got into conversation, the drift of which was so peculiar that Dr. Buckland exclaimed, "You must be Miss Morland, to whom I am about to deliver a letter of introduction."
Pow! In olden days, wooing, drawing attention to a potential love interest's peculiarities, was all kinds of smooth. And, of course, Buckland's negging paid off. Following their nuptials, he and Morland, and their pet tortoise, embarked on a 10-month honeymoon, visiting scientific luminaries on the continent and famous geographical sites. As the first professor of geology at Oxford University, Buckland spent a considerable amount of time digging around in mud and sand, and was, consequently, responsible for excavating the world's first dinosaur fossil. Though the term dinosaur had yet to be coined, in 1824, Buckland published a monograph entitled Notice on the Megalosaurus, or Great Fossil Lizard, of Stonesfield. Unlike the scriptural geologists that came later, Buckland did not hold with any literal interpretation of Genesis in the Bible, especially in terms of geographic time. As a deeply religious man, he rejected evolution, though it was clear to him that the Earth had supported life long before the existence of humans. He therefore spent a considerable amount of time trying to reconcile biblical interpretation and geology. In this way, in 1836, he published the snappily titled Geology and Mineralogy, part of the Bridgewater Treatise on the Power, Wisdom, and Goodness of God as Manifested in Creation. Buckland's work examined everything from mineral deposits to fossil plants in an effort to find evidence of an intelligent creator. And though it didn't really work out, he did do a pretty good job of making the science of geology more palatable to the faithful. In 1822, after examining fossil bones at Kirkdale Cave in Yorkshire, Buckland initially interpreted the cave as the habitat of hyenas during the antediluvian times. That is, the period outlined in Genesis between the fall of man and the biblical flood. The fossils discovered within were not the remains of animals that had perished in the flood and been transported from the tropics by raging waters, as he and his contemporaries initially believed. Instead, it was just a hyena lair containing their remains and those of the animals they preyed upon. Buckland wrote later,
"It must already appear probable from the facts above described, particularly from the comminuted state and apparently gnawed condition of the bones, that the cave in Kirkdale was, during a long succession of years, inhabited by a den of hyenas, and that they dragged into its recesses the other animal bodies whose remains were found mixed indiscriminately with their own. This conjecture is rendered almost certain by the discovery I made of many small balls of solid calcareous excrement of an animal that had fed upon the bones."
His studies at Kirkdale Cave also imbued Buckland with a fascination for coprolites, fossilised poo. Certain that the petrified plop he discovered matched those of the Cape hyena, Buckland immediately purchased one and kept it as a pet. Feeding the hyena guinea pigs, he then scrutinised its excrement in an effort to prove his hypothesis, all from the comfort of his own study, much to the chagrin of his wife. Throughout his life, Buckland struggled to reconcile his scientific outlook and his faith, but kept an admirably open mind. In 1845, Lord Playfair described his friend as a born experimentalist, something he certainly didn't flinch from when it came to entertaining guests.
"I recollect various queer dishes which he had at his table. The hedgehog was a successful experiment, I thought. It was good and tender. On another occasion, I recollect a dish of crocodile, which was an utter failure."
Sunday lunch at the Buckland household comprises some very odd dishes indeed, ranging from exotic meats shipped from abroad to things he and his son dug up in the garden. Meals comprised of such tasty treats as panther, rhino, elephant trunk, earwigs, slugs, and puppies. Mice on toast was a favoured amuse-bouche in the household. Buckland said later that he thought that mole was the most unpleasant thing he'd ever tasted. Until, that was, he sampled stewed bluebottles. There was a point to Buckland's culinary endeavours, however, or at least some of it. Though he was primarily driven by his curiosity about the natural world, Buckland lived in a time of socio-economic extremes and social unrest. With the cost of living rising for the poor, members of the upper classes were increasingly fearful about the possibility of food riots. And Buckland was keen to find foods that were both bountiful and cheap to address this. However, despite their keen interest in poo, it turned out that blue bottles were not the answer. Buckland was a man with a pronounced social conscience, and he undertook several benevolent endeavours to address the hardships of the working classes. He cleaned up the London streets by pioneering the installation of drain pipes in the city, illuminated Oxford with gas, and, to increase the surplus of food in the country, advocated strongly for the use of coprolites as fertiliser. His passion for prehistoric poo was such, he even had a table in his home inlaid with fossilised dinosaur shite, so that he could eat his dinner off it. His studies in the natural world also endowed him with a remarkable knowledge. Riding to London on a dark night in the dead of winter, Buckland and a friend discovered they had gone wrong and realised that they were lost. Dismounting his horse and kneeling on the ground, Buckland scooped up a handful of earth and pronounced,
"Ah, Uxbridge."
In the Sicilian town of Palermo, Buckland visited a small mountainside cave which reportedly contained the bones of Saint Rosalia. The moment Buckland clapped his eyes on the holy relics, he exclaimed, much to the fury of his hosts,
"Those are the bones of a goat, not a woman."
The irate Catholic priests that set about forcibly removing Buckland and his party from the shrine obviously took his words to heart, as they quickly removed the bones from public view. Visiting another cathedral in Italy, Buckland was shown a patch of floor marked with the blood of a local martyr, which was said to appear fresh every morning. In the presence of the Catholic priest, tasked with showing him the miraculous stain, Buckland got down on his hands and knees and licked the flagstones.
"I can tell you precisely what that is," he said, returning to his feet. "That's bat urine."
Perhaps Buckland's most infamous moment came in 1848, when he visited his friend Lord Harcourt. The Harcourt family had come into possession of a silver locket containing the heart of the late King Louis XIV. A peculiar family heirloom, sure enough, but maintaining the mummified hearts of dead monarchs had been part of the French tradition since the 13th century. Indeed, kings would typically specify where they wanted their hearts to finish up, and Louis requested that his heart be laid next to his father's. When the French Revolution occurred, the imperial tombs were plundered, and the royal organ ended up being sold on the black market, where Lord Harcourt's family acquired it. During dinner at the Harcourt's house, the guests were treated to an intimate viewing of the strange object, and the silver locket travelled down the line of guests for them to view. In what seems to have been the work of a moment, as the object came into his grasp, Buckland remarked,
"I've eaten many strange things, but I've never eaten the heart of a king before."
And with that, he snapped the box open, grabbed the heart, and swallowed it whole.
I say.
Buckland died in 1856 of a disorder of the neck and brain that his son attributed to an accident he had suffered on a geological site some years earlier. When his last will and testament was read, it turned out that Buckland had arranged to be buried in a graveyard in Oxfordshire. However, when the gravediggers got to work, they discovered that the chosen gravesite had an outcrop of solid Jurassic limestone just below the ground level, that was so tough that they finally had to resort to blasting it out with high explosives. Buckland, an astute geologist, and something of a wag, is thought to have picked this precise spot to carry out a final jest. Though for the gravediggers, the joke probably landed about as well as his bird impressions.
This is a bonus episode written for Patreon subscriber Gaston Filano.
Why, he's too orangey for crows.